Welcome to Edward Willett's World of Science for January 19, 2011. For more science columns, visit my website at edwardwillett.com. That's EDWARDWILLETT.com. And look for my latest fantasy novel, Magebane, written under the pseudonym Lee Arthur Chain and published by Daw Books. It's available now. Publishers Weekly calls it spectacular. This week's science column, the naming of drugs. If you take a prescription drug, you've probably said to your pharmacist something like this. Hi, I need a refill of the hydrochlorothoroactazine, zinc, something like that. At which point the pharmacist manfully chokes back his laughter at your pharmaceutical phonetics failure, tactfully supplies the actual name of the drug, and the transaction continues. So why do drugs have such tongue-twisting names? Who comes up with them? An article by Carmen Drawl in the latest issue of Chemical and Engineering News, CNDN, explains, in the context of failed efforts by Winston Pharmaceuticals to change the generic name of a compound chemically known as, deep breath, CIS8-methyl-N-vinyl-6-nonanamide, or something like that. Drawl reveals that drugs have something in common with T.S. Eliot's cats. Each must have three different names. First, there is the chemical name, sanctioned by the International Union of Pure and Applied Chemistry, IUPAC. Then there is the proprietary name, the brand name the manufacturer gives the drug for marketing purposes. But in addition, each drug must be assigned a generic name. Brand name drugs eventually go off patent, after all. As well, generic names can be used in scientific literature, on package labels, and in educational materials without running into copyright issues. The current system of assigning generic names is half a century old. By the late 1950s, drug compounds had become so complex that the IUPAC names were too unwieldy for general use, so in 1961, the American Medical Association, the U.S. Pharmaceutical Convention, and the American Pharmacists Association created the U.S. Adopted Names, USAN, Council to select concise generic names. The Food and Drug Administration became part of the process in 1967. In the States today, the USAN Council names the active ingredients in everything from drugs to vaccines to contact lenses and sunscreens. It recommends its names to the World Health Organization's International Non-Proprietary Names Program, and it's that organization that eventually settles on the generic name that will be used worldwide, including in Canada. The international nature of drug names is why you'll never see a generic drug name containing letters H, J, K, or W. They lead to pronunciation problems in some languages. And some names put forward by the USAN Council or other national bodies are rejected by the INN program because they have bad or even obscene connotations elsewhere. New generic names start with an established collection of name fragments called stems, each of which has a meaning connected to a particular class of drug or a particular mode of action. For instance, the stem AC relates to anti-inflammatory agents, derivatives of acetic acid, the stem ADOX to a class of antibacterials, etc. The list of stems has slowly changed over the years as new drugs come on the market. There's also a set of prefixes. CNEN's article gives as an example the popular drug Nexium, whose generic name is esomeprazole. The stem prazole tells you, if you've memorized all the stems, that the drug is a benzimidazole anti-ulcer agent. The ES prefix, CNN says, quote, describes the nature of the drug's chirality. Esomeprazole is destrorotatory and contains a chiral center in the S configuration, unquote. An explanation I personally found less than helpful, but you get the idea. Winston Pharmaceuticals' efforts to change the generic name zucupsiacin to civamide, because they said civamide was commonly used in hospitals and by pharmacists, failed because generic names are rarely changed, provided standard protocols were followed. Unless, that is, there's a serious safety issue. CNDN gives as an example the family of botulinum toxin drugs, which includes Botox, which underwent a generic name change in 2009 because under the old name, dosage mix-ups had led to serious side effects and even deaths. With prefixes, stems, and a few other conventions taken into consideration, the generic name is often three-quarters done. The originating company might then get to throw in a syllable or two of its choice. Often, it chooses to recognize one of the scientists involved in the drug's development. For instance, the experimental hepatitis C drug Isonoprevir gets the sun part of its name from Lee Kang Sun, the chemist who first made it for Bristol-Myers Squibb. So the next time you struggle with a tongue-twisting drug name, don't take it personally. The name wasn't chosen solely to baffle you and amuse your pharmacist. Drug names have specific meanings. Learn their building blocks, and you too can tell at a glance what a generic drug should do. Well, provided you know what chirality is. That's this week's Willett's World of Science. I'll be back next week with another science column. In the meantime, you can read my science columns online at edwardwillett.com, EDWARDWILLETT.com. And look for my latest fantasy novel, Magebane, published by Daw Books under the pseudonym Lee Arthur Chain. Publishers Weekly really did call it spectacular. That's it for this week. I'll be back next week. Bye for now.